People First Radio is a program about people, the society in which we live, and issues related to health and wellness.
This is People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. Today on the program, detecting psychosis from social media posts? We might not be fully there yet, but the idea is being looked at. We'll hear from a PhD student in Germany about a recent study on the topic. Where the field is at, how it could help, what the risks are, what people need to keep in mind about social media data, and so much more. Welcome to People First Radio. Could your social media posts be used to help diagnose you with a mental health condition? If they could, would that be a good thing? Maybe you could get help with a condition before you experience serious consequences. Maybe you could experience negative impacts from false positives or from companies using this kind of technology to decide not to hire you. These are some of the considerations that accompany Lauren Plonk's field of research. A study of his was recently published in the journal Schizophrenia. It was looking at Reddit posts on psychosis-related subreddits and studying their speech coherence. On the show today, we'll explain what that means and what kind of conclusions we can draw from the research. We'll talk about how this kind of thing could help people. We'll also explore the risks and ethical considerations. Along the way, we'll step aside from the social media side of things and mix in excerpts from a pair of first-hand accounts, one from someone who has experienced psychosis and one from someone who has experienced schizophrenia. Thank you for joining me. Let's get into it.
My name is Lauren Plonk, and I'm a PhD student in a university in Germany, Bochum to be exact. And I study psychology, and I'm interested in use of language models and language processing in clinical psychology.
And why have you been studying people's posts on Reddit?
Yeah, so that's a study that we recently did. We were interested in psychosis, which is a group of disorders which is characterized by delusions and hallucinations. So people might be, for example, delusions could be that people are convinced that they are maybe being chased by the FBI or maybe been sent to Earth as a messiah or something. Those are typical delusions. And hallucinations are that people hear things that aren't there. So, for example, voices, or see people that aren't there. And so that's the group of disorders, of psychotic disorders. And these people with these psychotic disorders, they tend to have different speech patterns. And we were interested in whether these speech patterns may also be evidenced from social media posts, so from online behavior. And Reddit is such a social media platform. It's a very popular social media platform. And on Reddit, you can find so-called subreddits, which are forums on specific topics. Could be anything, could be like dogs, cats, for example. Those are very popular. But another popular kind of subreddit are these mental disorder subreddits, where people suffering from a specific diagnosis basically gather to discuss the diagnosis, their experience, and also to receive peer support. Yeah, and we were specifically interested in speech coherence in these posts on Reddit. And we wanted to find out whether these specific speech alterations could also be evidenced in these users.
When you say speech coherence and speech alterations, what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, so it's a specific type of language alteration that you find in people with psychotic disorders, for example, schizophrenia, which is a commonly known psychotic disorder. And I think it's best explained by an example. So, for example, you could say, I like flowers and I really like going to the beach because having holidays is just very nice. But then those thoughts are all quite related, but then the person could say something like, Da Vinci's art is just really beautiful. And at this point, the idea isn't really related anymore to the beach maybe or to the flowers. And so what we find in people with psychotic disorders is that the thoughts that they sort of communicate are not that related to each other. So they are incoherent.
And how do you measure that? How do you kind of decide that something meets some sort of threshold to make a determination about?
Yeah, basically to do that, we use a similar kind of technology that is used in chatbots such as ChatGPT, which is a chatbot that most people, I guess, know nowadays. And so these this technology enables machines to understand and produce language. And as a consequence, it also enables them to understand how similar two sentences are. And using this technology, we can then say how similar the sentences of a person are that a person utters. And the more dissimilar these sentences are, then the less coherent the speech is.
And so if you were to really explain, like, I'm 5 years old, maybe a little older, what exactly you did, you took these posts on Reddit and you were trying to study how coherent they were. What did that actually look like and what did you find?
Yeah, so basically we gathered a lot of posts on the internet, on Reddit, and these posts are just publicly available. We downloaded them and then ran them through our model, basically, through these algorithms to determine the speech coherence of people that are part of these psychosis subreddits and forums, and people that are just usual users that have never really engaged with any mental disorder subreddit. And what we basically find after doing these analyses is that the speech coherence is also lower in these people using the psychosis subreddits based on their social media behavior. And I think this is exciting because there's a now good history of research investigating speech coherence in the lab. And there it typically looks the way that you interview a person that is has a schizophrenia diagnosis, for example, and you ask them, for example, to describe a picture and you record their speech. And then you also run it through a model, through a machine learning model. And then you are able to, based on only the speech data, determine with a very high accuracy whether the person is suffering from schizophrenia or whether the person is actually healthy. And moreover, you can not only detect whether the person is currently suffering from such a disorder, but whether they will be suffering from that disorder in 6 months. And so that's very exciting, I think. And it's interesting that these kind of speech patterns also show on social media, because that sort of hints at the idea that we could maybe someday use social media data to predict a mental disorder or to indicate that a person might be suffering from a mental disorder.
So in maybe conventional studies of speech coherence, people might come in, people who already have a diagnosis of schizophrenia, they might do some kind of lab work where they're just speaking and that gets analyzed, and maybe there's a control group of people who don't have a diagnosis and they do the same thing and that gets analyzed. And if you were to just look at the speech, you could tell which group was which. And the idea behind your research is the same thing, but we're not in the lab. Now we're just looking at random social media users that we don't know who have posted on these forums about schizophrenia, psychosis, other subreddits versus users who have not posted on those forums. And we can kind of do the same thing. We can kind of make an educated guess.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. So we can make an educated guess because the accuracy is not that high as in the lab. But I think it's exciting to also explore this idea on social media because really there are a lot of challenges mental health care is facing. I think everybody knows that mental disorders are a very big problem in society today. A lot of people are affected, and we haven't seen as much progress, I would say, as we would have liked to in the last year, in the last several years and decades. And so I think we need paradigm shifts. And one paradigm shift could be that we don't invite people all the time to a doctor's office to make some sort of diagnostic session, but that we use their social media behavior to maybe find out in the first place who might be suffering from schizophrenia, for example, so that we can check and validate that diagnosis then later in the doctor's office. And there's so much potential in that because 5 billion people use social media. And so, as you can imagine, it would be absolutely impossible to get 5 billion people regularly into a doctor's office to check them for a mental health disorder. But if we had some system that could diagnose mental health disorders accurately based on online behavior, then we could do that for everyone who's regularly using social media. That would be very economical, and also I think very good, could be very good for a lot of people, because you know, what do you want to do? It's similar to other diseases like cancer. What's the ideal thing to do if you want to check whether you have some sort of cancer? Is to regularly check. Most people don't do it, especially when they're young, and maybe not as often as they should. Why? Because it's a lot of work, and also because it's very expensive. For example, if you do an MRI to check for some kind of cancer, it's very expensive. And also inviting people to your doctor's office all the time to check on their mental health is also very expensive. But analyzing social media posts is not really expensive. Of course, you need some sort of data center to analyze, but apart from that, it's very economical.
Is there something really scary about the idea that you might just sort of be posting online? Maybe you're even like a little concerned and looking for help, and someone or some entity, maybe even a company, is just looking through your data and trying to diagnose you with a psychiatric disorder.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a good point. Of course, there's great potential in all these technologies, but there's also probably great risk. And one great risk is the question, who has access to this kind of information? You know, if we sort of play a mental game and imagine like these systems are already in place and freely available to everyone, then everyone would be able to tell just from social media posts whether a given user is probably, maybe, suffering from a mental disorder like schizophrenia. And that could obviously be abused. For example, you mentioned a company. If a company is hiring people, then a company is oftentimes going to make the economic decision, right? So the company wants people that are healthy, that are unlikely to drop out of their job. And so these companies would probably be interested in using these models to determine whether an applicant is going to likely become mentally ill in the future or is maybe already today. And this could lead to the companies rejecting these applicants just based on that information. And that's, I think, a great risk, because people that are suffering from mental health issues are already discriminated in various ways, and they already have problems holding jobs. And abusing these systems for that purpose could make their life even harder and their ability to hold a job.
You're listening to People First Radio. I'm speaking with Lauren Plonk on today's show. He's a PhD student in Germany who's completed a study into the speech coherence of a number of Reddit posts related to psychosis. The study was recently published in the journal Schizophrenia. We're going to get back to that conversation later on in the program. I also wanted to bring you some first-hand perspectives on psychosis on today's show. Back in April, University of Alberta student Gerline Kaur shared some of her experiences with me. Here's a portion of that conversation.
My name is Gerline, and I'm a student at University of Alberta currently, and I'm taking psychology, which works perfectly for me because I love all things mental health, and I love talking about it, so that's me.
And we're here today to talk a little bit about psychosis. Could you tell me, to begin, maybe what psychosis is?
Yes, absolutely. So psychosis, so often people will read in textbooks or papers or read from like classrooms that psychosis is this break in reality. That's the term that will come up for them. This little short description that, oh, it's a break in reality. But what this kind of description might be okay from a doctor's perspective or from a researcher's, but it doesn't quite capture what it means to me, like what it means to me based on my experience and what it really is. It's more than just a break in reality. For example, in psychosis, if I see things that other people can't see and it impacts me, for example, seeing scary faces and I'm scared, I don't know what to do with it. Maybe it makes me cry. Maybe it makes me so scared that I can't leave my room. When things like these come up, it's a real impact on my life, and a break in reality doesn't quite cover it. So psychosis is, it can look different for so many different people. It's a symptom of something, and all the technical definitions quite dive into what it looks like based on people's experiments. So what I would say is that if anybody is wanting to learn about psychosis, learn about it. Yeah, you can cover it from research, but also look at it from the perspective of the other person. What are they dealing with? So if I see something that you're not able to see, a scary face, for example, I've seen many of those in my experiences. I used to be so scared of them that I couldn't move. I used to be like in shock at one point. That used to happen to me. But over time, as I started to go into recovery, I realized that, hey, I don't have to be scared of them. I can either choose to ignore them or interact them, but they're not going to impact my life anymore. And I can go about my day as a normal person. My perspective might be a little different, but it's just as real to me as somebody else's experiences are.
Can you tell me a little bit maybe about anything you'd want to share with folks about your particular journey with psychosis?
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing I'll say is that psychosis, for me, it came on very strongly. Okay. So I was literally locked in my room for days. I self-isolated because at times I thought somebody was trying to kill me within my own house. Now that can be really scary for a person. And I struggled in isolation a lot. Now that's one example of how psychosis can impact you. I used to keep food in my room for days. I barely went to the washroom, only when like I would try to hold myself and then leave. And you can impact how that impacts your hygiene or daily life, just struggling with the stress of it. Every time I used to go into the shower, I used to play music really loud or count in my head with numbers. So I would think that I'm not alone and nobody's trying to hurt me right now. So for me, it was a very strong experience. But when I started to go into recovery, what that looked like is for me taking medications. Not everybody has to take medications, but what it did for me is it allowed me to be in a space where when these kind of things came up, a scary face is there. I think somebody's trying to kill me, or I think somebody's trying to harm me in some way. Then what I did was take a deep breath and just evaluate that situation. What is the evidence behind my thought? You know how CBT really works is like looking at evidence. What is the likelihood this is going to happen? What is making me think that this is realistic in my experiences? So kind of evaluating the situation and going from there, it became easier for me. What I would say is that just because somebody's experiencing psychosis, it doesn't mean necessarily that they're going to always struggle the way I did, because recovery journey is really important. Give people the time they need to overcome their struggles, whether that means getting support from family, friends, whether that means taking their time to realize that whatever's happening around them, it might be a little tough. Take your time recovering, or it might be taking medications, right? Whatever you do, just realize that people are allowed to take their time. And if they are struggling in isolation, just be there for support. Be there for just to say, hey, I know you're struggling right now, but I'm here for you, whatever you need. Even that can make a huge difference. For my situation, it was a little different. I come from an immigrant family, so we weren't aware what psychosis is. We don't know why it happened. We don't know where it comes from, and it's not talked about. So that made it a little bit harder because I was really embarrassed to talk about it with anyone. I didn't know what was wrong with me. And going from there, it was just, I had to be alone. I had to be alone, unfortunately. But now I'm much more comfortable talking about these things. And I know if somebody else is struggling with this, if helping them understand that you can recover from this can be a step forward for them, then I'm happy to talk about this.
Gurleen Kaur speaking to me about her experiences with psychosis on an April episode of the program. You can find the full interview on our podcast feed and on the web. You can find it using the search terms, U of A student shares experience with psychosis. Lauren Plonk has been studying the idea of Reddit posts as a potential diagnostic aid to detect psychosis. The German PhD student recently had a paper on the subject published in the journal Schizophrenia. We were speaking about it earlier on today's show. Let's get you back to that conversation. Could you give me a sense of how accurate maybe this kind of technology, the kind of thing you were doing in your study, is? Like, what are the relative degrees of certainty, and where is this at right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So the diagnostic systems that I described earlier in the laboratory, they are quite good. They are not used in routine psychiatric care, but they show good accuracies, sometimes 80 to 90% accuracy in determining whether someone is mentally disordered or not. In our case, the accuracy would be much lower. There's many reasons for that. Some of the reasons are, for example, that not everyone in the schizophrenia subreddit actually suffers from schizophrenia, probably. And we didn't go ahead and check that, right? And so to get better accuracy for these systems, we would have to check stuff like this. We probably would be advised to run a formal diagnosis before. And another point is, maybe a reason for why our model isn't as accurate as in the laboratory, is that we only focus on one specific dimension of speech. So we only focus on speech coherence. But there are various different speech impairments that you find in people with psychotic disorders. And it's not just coherence, it's also some sort of alteration of grammatical structures and various other things. It's interesting to research this further because we can really see how far we can go, how far the accuracy can go if we include more markers with more data and maybe with cleaner data sets, so where we really know whether a person is actually suffering from a mental disorder.
If you were able to take this years down the road and sort of perfect the technology in a maybe utopian way, what would that look like? What would be the end goal?
Yeah, so I think the best case scenario is that a person maybe is using social media. They are informed about all the systems that are implemented in the first place. So I think that's very important, and we can talk about that. And then they just go about their day, you know, post regularly to engage with their friends and talk with people about certain topics. And then at some point, they in real life start to develop some symptoms, which are at the start maybe very subtle. So they are very subtle deficits that start to accumulate, and they would never be caught by a traditional diagnostic system. So they wouldn't think to go to the doctor's office because the issues aren't as bad right now. But these diagnostic systems on social media, maybe these algorithms, already pick up some alteration in their speech pattern. And based on these alterations, they can say that with a certain accuracy, this person may develop some issues in the future. This maybe then look like a, I don't know, message on social media where the person is informed of that. And then also advice to maybe go see the doctor, go to the doctor's office to talk about him or her about their issues, and maybe receive a formal diagnosis to check if there's actually an issue or if that's just a false positive. Yeah, I think that that's very promising, because most of the time in psychiatric care and also in mental health care, people develop the full disorder, the full, for example, schizophrenia. And I think that's maybe also important to emphasize that especially these psychotic disorders are incredibly severe. So schizophrenia is probably one of the worst and most severe mental disorders. It can have a really negative effect on people's lives. And so if people only ever get help once they've developed the disorder, then a lot of damage has already been done. The people have already suffered so much at that point, put possibly their own lives at risk, because, for example, people suffering from schizophrenia also have an increased risk of dying of unnatural causes, for example. They are unable to hold a job, and maybe they lose their job because of their illness, right? And or they lose relationships or other things in their lives. They lose their homes or something. And if we catch them before that develops fully, at a point in their lives where they have some deficits but don't notice them really, then we can maybe help them before it gets too bad. Maybe we can give them appropriate medication before it's too bad, or we can help them in some other way with some other prevention program.
How has doing this kind of research maybe shaped the way you think about your own use of social media?
Yeah, well, I think when I first came across it, this whole field, you know, which has been active in research for a couple of years now, it's a very new field of research. I've definitely thought about the fact that I have used Reddit before. And so Reddit is a very common platform in this sort of research field. And I thought, okay, have I ever posted anything on Reddit or the internet in general that anyone has ever used for their research? Maybe, possibly, probably, because also these data sets are incredibly large. So in our data sets, there were over 2 million posts, which we analyzed. So it's a good probability that that actually happened, because there are also hundreds of studies, of course. Yeah, especially what I just mentioned, because it used to be the fact that you only ever give out sensitive information if you want to. The internet was a very safe place in that sense. And that might be changing with the development of such a system, because then private information like your mental health status isn't necessarily private anymore. And so I definitely think about how I personally, but also other people should be using social media. And for example, again, I've seen people online, actually on Reddit, for doing my own research, that actively share their mental health issues. And I think that's courageous, absolutely. But I think there's also a risk attached to it, to sharing private information on the internet. And at the point where it's where people have no choice, then it becomes a very big issue. Because then it's not only possibly problematic for the person, but it's their choice, but it's problematic for the person and it hasn't been their choice, right? And so I think that's exactly where we need legislation to step in. But I also recognize that it's probably hard to put in place such legislation, because at the end of the day, it's public data, right? Everyone can do what we did, given they have the expertise, of course, but the models are available online, the data is available online, we've outlined what we did, and so every company, every firm can basically do what we did, right?
This is People First Radio. I'm speaking with Lauren Planck, a German PhD student who's been researching social media posts as a potential diagnostic aid for conditions related to psychosis. We'll hear more later on in the program. Back in April 2023, I spoke with Leif Gregersen. He lives in Edmonton and has shared his experiences with schizophrenia on a blog and in a number of books. I want to play you a portion of our conversation.
My name is Leif Gregersen. I mostly grew up in Edmonton. I spent a couple of years in Vancouver, really enjoyed it out there. Got to be a little expensive, so I went back to Edmonton. My educational background, I've taken a few courses in humanities and a lot of courses in writing, and never got a degree, but I managed to write about 12 books, and three of which are memoirs of my lived experience with mental illness. Other than that, I've written a lot of magazine and newspaper articles. I currently work as a teacher, a creative writing teacher and a civics teacher at a psychiatric hospital where I was once a patient, which is kind of interesting. And I also give a lot of presentations about mental health for the Schizophrenia Society. Just did one today at a high school. And a couple of weeks back, I gave one to the Edmonton Police recruit class, which is kind of interesting. And I was like going to them because I kind of hope, oh, hey, I know you. I'm not going to give you a ticket, you know. So, yeah. So a lot of things.
Welcome again to the program. I first came across your story and some of your writing in a column where you were discussing the idea of a new name for schizophrenia. Could you tell me a bit more about that idea?
Well, there's been a lot of movements to sort of destigmatize mental illness a little bit. One of the things that's already happened is the term manic depression has been changed over to bipolar disorder. And depression has sort of been changed over to unipolar, maybe unipolar depression or things like that. But they're just trying to find new names that that describe things better. One of the problems with the term schizophrenia is that people see the word schizo and they think it's a split. And then they start thinking it means split personality. When in actual fact, schizophrenia is more of a condition with an illness known as psychosis, or symptom known as psychosis, in which you have a split from reality. And so there's a number of people that have been trying to look for new names. Dissociative identity disorder is one of the names that have been discussed. I don't really know if it's caught on yet. One thing I do know is it bothers me a little bit when people ask me if I'm schizophrenic or what is it like to be a schizophrenic, things like that. The term schizophrenic seems to sort of imply that you're an illness before you're a person. Like I sort of prefer a person living with schizophrenia, something like that. And I certainly think that if they went one step further and were able to change the name to something more descriptive, that that would help that certain amount of stigma as well. And stigma and myth aspect.
So person-centered language, referring to someone when you're talking about schizophrenia, you might say someone with schizophrenia rather than schizophrenic.
When you call a person a schizophrenic, it's almost like calling them a cancer or calling them an influenza or something. It just sort of puts the illness in the foreground.
Is there anything that you'd like just the general population to know when it comes to either psychosis or schizophrenia?
I don't know. It's hard to say because there is one thing that kind of bothers me is I don't know about Vancouver or the Lower Mainland, but one thing I do know is that a lot of the north is served by a hospital near Edmonton called Alberta Hospital, and it's almost a small city off to itself. They've got hundreds of staff members, hundreds of psych beds, dozens of buildings, all kinds of resources. And yet it's a place that's sort of tucked away off to one side beyond the highway. Like you can't access it from the highway. To get there, you have to use these old back roads that are all kind of in bad repair. And I've always really believed that if they had a place like that in the community, it would better serve the people who are supposed to be treated by the hospital. For example, when I was younger, at age 18, I first went in the hospital, and it took a lot of things away from me. I was no longer allowed back at my home with my parents. I could no longer afford a car. I lost my part-time job. I was kicked out of school. Now, the amazing thing was I was very ill, and I went in the hospital, and in just a couple months, I came out, and I was thinking and acting normally. But I experienced such a loss that it was very difficult for me to continue with medications. It was very difficult for me to have any kind of stability. And I really sort of blame just the idea of tucking the hospital away where nobody can see it.
I know some of the writing you've done has talked about the idea of stigma. You tend to hear a lot of kind of general conversations about reducing stigma when it comes to a lot of different things. But I'm wondering about what are some of the specific ways that stigma can manifest itself when it comes to schizophrenia, and what can people do to avoid specific stigmatizing behaviors?
The funny thing is there are some stigmatizing behaviors that are valid. Now, if a person is off their medication and living on the streets and their thoughts are very chaotic and their actions are sort of very chaotic, it might be a good thing to cross the street and not interact with the person. But still, it's important to remember that that is a human being. And instead of just walking across the street, you can always call the crisis team or the police and, you know, explain that this person is erratic in behavior and all that sort of stuff. And they would send somebody who would do their best to try and get the person into some situation where their mental illness was being dealt with.
So when someone is in active psychosis, that's one thing. Are there other elements of stigma that you think need to be addressed when it comes to schizophrenia?
Oh, yeah, I do believe there are many elements that should be addressed when it comes to schizophrenia. One thing off the top of my head, it's very hard to get an apartment if the landlord knows you have schizophrenia. I can remember a few occasions where, well, there's this one time I was in Calgary and I was considering moving down there because I had a cousin and I got along with really well. And he introduced me to his landlady and she said, oh, I've had people before who were retarded. You know, I was like, that's the R word. You don't use the R word anymore. And second of all, it has nothing to do with people with schizophrenia. And I didn't really challenge it, but housing is definitely one way that people can be stigmatized and are being stigmatized. You know, you get out of the hospital after a few months of treatment and you go fill out an application. If you put down that you were in a psychiatric hospital, there's very little chance you're going to get an apartment. And it sort of goes the same for a lot of things like employment and different things like that. And there's so much misunderstanding surrounding schizophrenia. A lot of it has to do with popular media, you know, portraying people who have schizophrenia as serial killers and things like that. And a lot of these stigmas are simply untrue. Like I said, you could have a case where a person's, you know, acting out on the sidewalk and stuff like that. But those people are really very ill and need help. They don't need to be just completely shunned and whatever. One of the problems I had was, I recall I got out of the hospital and I wasn't aware of the huge stigma that had surrounded mental illness. And I had a job before I was in the hospital and I went back and I put down that I had been in the hospital and I'd been treated with occupational therapy. And I honestly thought they would look at it and say, oh, okay, well, you know, he had an illness, he was treated for it by medical doctors, all that stuff. And so now he's doing a lot better, so we'll hire him back. He was a good worker. But no, they just threw it right in the trash and I never heard from them again. Yeah, so there's a lot of ways stigma can really create barriers for people. And it's hard to say what is the best way really to reduce stigma. It's sort of there's different things all of us can do. And I think possibly one of the most important would be to sort of become an ally to people with schizophrenia and sort of stand up when they're being picked on. Or maybe you could say to a person's boss or something like, you know, he was in the hospital, but that's not his fault. He's still a good worker. Why don't you go ahead and just try him out and see if he'll do okay? You know, there's many ways to become an ally in the situation of people with schizophrenia. So
Leif Gregersen speaking with me in April of 2023 about schizophrenia and some of his experiences with the condition. You can find the full interview on the Vimis website and the People First Radio podcast feed. You can also find Leif Gregersen's blog at edmontonwriter.wordpress.com. On today's show, we've also been hearing from Lauren Plonk. He's a PhD student in Germany who's been studying the idea of using social media posts as a diagnostic aid for conditions related to psychosis. Let's get you back to that conversation. I'm curious about that idea of sort of maybe unintended consequences. I know earlier on we talked about the idea that, you know, corporations looking to hire people could use this kind of tool in a way that I think most people would generally agree is kind of unfortunate. But that idea of self-stigmatization, I was also wondering how, you know, even having a conversation like this one, what do you think maybe the general public needs to be aware of as regards stigma and disorders that could lead to psychosis?
I think especially around psychosis. So I'm not necessarily a clinical expert on the disorder. I'm not a psychotherapist. I'm a psychologist, so I did a master's degree in psychology, but I don't treat people having mental disorders on a day-to-day basis. So I think, you know, I'm not an expert in that specific field of clinical diagnoses of people with psychosis, but I think there's a lot of stigma around psychotic disorders. So especially schizophrenia, you know, people are termed crazy, which is a popular term, and also a very hurtful term, of course. And also they are termed dangerous for the public by people that, you know, are not in the field, not aware. And I think these things are very dangerous because they already have such difficult lives. All these disorders, for example, schizophrenia, correlate with low socioeconomic status, poor education. As I said earlier, earlier mortality, so people are more likely to die of unnatural causes also. And so I think further adding these social factors of people stigmatizing them, putting them into a box, that's very harmful. Because as human beings, we are social beings and we need a community. And I think to be shunned out because you have a mental disorder, that's very bad. And we should definitely avoid that. And so I think part of that, about all these issues, whether it be the stigmatization issue, or also the diagnosis based on social media behavior and all these things, and how our data is being used in research and how it should be or could be used in research in the future and what could be done with this data. I think all these issues should be discussed more, not only in research circles around like doctors and psychologists and maybe computer scientists, but also we should engage in a conversation with the general population. And together with them decide what we want to create as systems and how we want to shape research also.
That's interesting. We've been talking about this tool, this potential diagnostic tool, maybe years down the road of looking at someone's social media. And we've talked about some of the ways that it can be used. Maybe I'll really simplify things and say for good or maybe for evil, to be melodramatic. And I almost get the sense that a key determining factor in the hypothetical universe where this tool develops as to which way it would go is almost just like, what is the level of stigma around some of these conditions in the general public, among people who would be using these tools or be on the receiving end of them?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we talk about, you know, sharing information or sort of unwillingly sharing information about your mental health status online as a very negative thing. And, you know, maybe that's even part of it, right? Because we live in a society where these things are disadvantageous to you. Because people that are giving out jobs, they maybe look at some of that stuff, or they maybe look at that sort of stuff. But all of these things, as you said, wouldn't be so much an issue if we were to treat the whole problem of mental disorders very differently and not use it as a motivation to maybe not recruit someone as a on the job market, for example.
How does research like this sort of be integrated into clinical practice down the road?
It's very hard to say because clinical practice really looks very different. So there are different parts of clinical practice, of course. So we have the diagnosis, and then we have the treatment, and the treatment is usually, depending on the disorder and also the group of people performing the treatment, centered around medications of psychopharmacological drugs. In the case of psychotic disorders, these are mostly antipsychotic drugs, and also, of course, psychotherapy. So engaging in a conversation through, for example, cognitive behavioral therapy. So you restructure maybe certain thought patterns that a person has, or you help them to change their behavior to be more happy and be more well adapted in everyday life and be more stable. And I think it really probably wouldn't change psychotherapy or maybe even psychopharmacological drugs, probably what we did and what the whole field is currently trying to do. But I think what it well may change is the diagnosis of mental disorders. And again, as I said, normally people come to the office when they already have the mental disorders, and then they are assigned the mental disorders, and then they are assigned a certain treatment. But at that point, it might already be very late in the whole process. And I think there's a lot of reasons to hope that these technologies will emerge as useful and will be accurate because it could save a lot of suffering, a lot of money, which is always relevant, right? Because people are investing in this research. And if they're investing in research, they want to know that the decision to invest in research is also economical. So the fact that it reduces suffering, ameliorates suffering, and also reduces the economic cost, that's perfect. Yeah, I think it's going to be infeasible. The world population is growing. It's not reducing, right? And so as we have more and more people in the world and people, for example, living in places where mental health care maybe exists, but it's very poorly funded, let's say. There isn't a lot of infrastructure around mental health care. I don't know exactly how it is in Canada for you, but in Germany we have the problem that if you want a place for psychotherapeutic treatment, you have to wait sometimes weeks to more likely months, right? And in the case of many disorders, that's horrible, right? You need help now, basically. You need help now. But there isn't enough infrastructure, enough places in psychotherapy, and enough psychotherapists. And we have similar problems for the diagnosis. We can't go around continually monitoring the population accurately because we can't invite everyone to the office all the time to run out psychological tests. It's not possible. It's not feasible. And it's especially not feasible if more and more people are being born, right? And so we need some alternative paradigms. And if you want something economical, don't gather data. Use data that already exists.
We've been talking about maybe a lot of hypotheticals. I feel like it's important to return back to what your study was looking into, what some of your specific findings were, the research, and reminding people of like where this is at. If you were imagining like a timeline of where this could be at in coming years, what would that sort of look like?
Yeah, I think there's two challenges. We've already touched on the ethical side. So the other challenge is basically the technical challenge. And it's a great challenge nonetheless. It's not solved the issue. We haven't got these algorithms and these models. There are many methodological problems with the research. The performance of the models is very different based on what you view as a successful model. What should the model do? Right? Because, for example, if I just use posts made to the subreddit schizophrenia and compare it to posts made from, subreddit cats, and I run these posts through a model, then I can have an accuracy of 95%. I'll know exactly whether the person posted in cats or if they posted in schizophrenia. And it's intuitive because the person posting in cats is probably talking about cats, and the person posting in schizophrenia probably talks about stuff related to their symptoms, for example, their auditory hallucinations or their delusions or something. And so that's easy. That's no problem. But that's also not what we want to do, right? We want to catch the people before they're active on schizophrenia, the subreddit schizophrenia, because we want to catch them before they're sick. And so that's a different threshold, a different goal, basically. And then if you do these other studies where you have like a more difficult aim, then the accuracy becomes lower. And so I think we need to be clear about what we want to predict in what context, right? We want to be clear about what a good threshold is, what constitutes a good model, how accurate is accurate enough, right? And also, I think what's been happening is very odd, maybe an interesting research trend. So computer scientists and psychologists are basically researching similar things, but very separate from each other, you know, like computer scientists nowadays are studying a lot of psychological questions. And psychologists are studying psychological questions and nowadays use the models made by computer scientists. And I think these two branches are researching in parallel. I think creating some synergy between computer scientists and psychologists, collaborating in research, I think that would be very fruitful because we could combine our psychological knowledge about mental disorders and stuff with their technical knowledge of how to create a good computational model. And then maybe through some synergy and cooperation, we'd be able to improve these models iteratively while being very open about what we are doing to the public, how we are doing it, whether what we are doing is even desirable, while also communicating with the politicians of the world. And then to someday, maybe, who knows when it's going to be, if it's going to be, but someday, maybe in the future, arrive at these models.
You mentioned there, you know, like whether it's even desirable. From your experience and like what you're able to see in kind of research environments, how do research questions, where these studies kind of come from, is there any interplay between people who have experienced psychiatric disorders like schizophrenia and where some of the studies and the ideas are coming from?
So you mean that the research questions that are posed by the researchers are informed by the people that actually have the disorder, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, probably much less than it should be, right? Because at the end of the day, no researcher really knows what it's like to have a disorder like schizophrenia without ever having had it, right? No one knows what it's like to experience these severe delusions, these breaks with reality, basically, without ever having experienced them. And so I think you can go a long way theorizing about mental disorders from the outside, basically. You can talk to the people in a clinical setting and have some idea about that. But I think what we do very little of is really, when designing a research question, engaging very much with the population in question. I think it's very separated from the populations. And I think it shouldn't be. I think with regard to the research that you're doing and the things that are maybe important to these people, they should be able to express that. And also what we do often in psychology is we have our models of a mental disorder of psychopathology, and we are sure that this thing is really the most important in trying to understand mental disorders. And then we have we have questionnaires that assess these different things like anxiety and depression and stuff. That's already putting it into a box, basically. That's already saying, we think this is your issue, really. And please tell me how much this is your issue. But what we really should be doing more of is going ahead and letting the people just tell us what their issue is, right? That would be very helpful. Just tell us what your issue is. And we'll figure it out from there, you know? And I think those aren't malevolent reasons behind that. The reasons for psychologists relying on these questionnaires and these models of psychopathology, that's not malevolent. That's just basically because we weren't able to do much else from a methodological perspective. It's very hard to deal with these free text data, unstructured text data, very hard to deal with. I would say up till now, though, because we now have computational models that have the capability of understanding and producing language. And so we can have people, for example, psychiatric populations, people suffering from a mental disorder, tell us, what's your issue? You know, what's your problem? What are you experiencing? And then we can use these massive amounts of very complex data that's really hard to make sense of with traditional psychological methods. You probably, you know, traditionally, psychologists would go ahead and have like a collection of 500 texts and then, you know, assign some sort of topic to those texts. They would say, okay, this person is talking about that topic. And so maybe the topic is anxiety related issues. And this person is talking about delusions or hallucinations. And that's a lot of effort. And I think the more elegant way to do it, and that's also why it's not done, right? Because it's not done that much, because it's very effortful. And an alternative is now to use these large language models to really leverage their understanding of human language to come to an understanding what the problems are that people are facing and to give us a comprehensive review and outline of what the issues are.
We've covered a lot of ground today. So we've been talking about this study that you did that was our starting point into Reddit posts online and the coherence, the speech coherence of them as a possible way to kind of mimic how you would diagnose a psychiatric disorder in a clinical setting. We talked about, you know, what this could look like down the road in a utopian way, what it could look like in maybe a dystopian way, if that's fair to say, where it's at, the idea of stigma. If someone is driving along in their car and listening to this, What do you think are the most important points you would want them to take away from our conversation today?
I think the most important point is what you say online really stays online and can be used for various things. And you may not know probably about all of the things that can be done with your data, but you should really become aware of what can be done so that you can make an educated decision on whether you want that to happen. I think that's the most important thing, to really communicate the state of the field and communicate to people what their data can be used for so they can decide. But also, I think the flip side of all of this is people should decide whether they want to contribute to these systems. And they should decide whether they want those systems to apply to them, whether they would want these systems to message them maybe someday. Hopefully not, but maybe, you know. And in that decision, not only lies the fact that you can disagree and say, I don't want to contribute, but there's also the decisions to participate in that research. Because you may be hopeful that contributing as a totally healthy person, or maybe as a person that's suffering from schizophrenia, for example, that you could contribute to these systems, make them better, contribute to research, and then maybe help one day. Really, the potential is very, very high. The sky's the limit, really, for these things.
Lauren Planck is a PhD student at Ruhr University Bochum in Germany. A study of his exploring speech coherence in psychosis-related Reddit posts was recently published in the journal Schizophrenia. We were discussing the idea of social media posts as a potential diagnostic aid for mental health conditions. That's all the time we have for the show today. You've been listening to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. Don't forget, you can find the show as a podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you can join me again next week.
People First Radio is a community media project of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast partners.